Hope you had a good Pesach. So this week's Tedra is Shmini, and we're in the middle of the inauguration ceremony, known as the Miluim ceremony, to dedicate the Mishkan. And what I want to do is I want to discuss a key event in this week's Tedra that helps us to explain the structure for approximately the first half of the Sidrot of Vayikra. So that key event is the tragic death of Aaron's two elder sons, Nadav and Avihu, on the eighth day, Vayhi Bayom Hashmini, on the eighth day of this inauguration ceremony. So effectively, what I want to do is spend the next 15 minutes answering the following question. So what I want to do is I want to fast forward to the beginning of Achrei Mot. So we've got Shmini, then it's Tazria Matzara, then Achrei Mot. So let me show you the pasuk. I think if I share my screen, this should work. So hopefully you can see that. Yeah. So this is the beginning of Achrei Mot, and it reads as follows: Vaydaber Hashem and Moshe, and Hashem spoke to Moshe. Achrei Mot Shnei Bnei Aaron, after the death of Aaron's two sons, when they came close to Hashem and they died. And my question is as follows. The beginning of Achrei Mot says Achrei Mot Shnei Bnei Aaron, it starts after the death of Nadav and Avihu, but the actual episode of Nadav and Avihu is halfway through Parshat Shmini, approximately two and a half sidrot before Achrei Mot. So I want to discuss why we've got this gap between the episode of Nadav and Avihu doing something wrong, which we'll discuss in a minute, and then this and Achrei Mot, which seems to suggest it's after the death of Nadav and Avihu. So why is there a gap? So to really answer this question, we need to understand a little bit about Nadav and Avihu. We could spend an hour discussing the many, many different opinions that are given what Nadav and Avihu did wrong. But I'll give you a select few. So Rashi brings a Gemara named Ruvin with two different opinions. The first opinion he gives is in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, who says that what they did wrong was that they brought an offering with incense, but they weren't they didn't consult Moshe. They acted on their own volition, and they should have consulted Moshe before hopping into the Mishkan and giving up an offering. The second opinion that Rashi brings is that of in the Gemara, that's of Rabbi Yishmael, who says that Nadav and Avihu were under the influence of alcohol. And where he gets that from is in the Sedra, straight after the episode, we have the law, we have the halacha. It says, "Vaydaber Hashem et Aaron le'mor." Hashem says to Aaron, "Say yain m'sheicha al teish atav anecha itach." You're not allowed to. The Kohanim weren't allowed to go into the Mishkan under the influence of alcohol, because the Sedra gives us this halacha straight juxtaposed to the event. Okay, so Rabbi Shmuel says actually what they did wrong is they were under the influence of alcohol. The Rashbam actually says something interesting. He focuses on the fact that they brought their own fire. So actually, let me actually share the actual pasuk, which would be useful. Here we go. Right, so here's the pasuk. It says, "Vayichu v'nei Aaron Nadav v'Avihu ish machtato," and the sons of Aaron Nadav and Avihu each brought his pan. "Vayinu v'hein eish," okay, and they put in it fire. "Vayisimu aleha ketoret," and they put ketoret incense. "Vayakrivu lifnei Hashem eish zara," okay, and they brought before Hashem an eish zara, okay, some sort of alien fire, whatever that means at this stage. "Asher lo tziva otam," okay, which they have not been commanded to do. So what Rashbam says, he says that it's the fact that they brought their own they brought their own fire, okay, because this was their dedication, it was a special day, there was supposed to be a divine fire that came and consumed their korban. But what I want to do is I want to focus on the very first opinion from that Rashi brought from Rabbi Eliezer, who says that what they did wrong was that they acted of their own volition. They brought up a korban. They didn't consult Moshe. They weren't commanded to bring any sort of korban. And that's the understanding what an Eish Zara. Okay, an Eish Zara, according to this opinion, is something that they weren't commanded to do. So I want to share with you a very interesting pattern when it comes to the Mishkan. So we're going to go back to Parshat Pekudei. Okay, so in Vayakam Pekudei, we start reading the very detailed instructions, very very precise instructions for the Mishkan. And so let me just show you. Here we go. So these are some instructions for the Mishkan. And I want to show you a repeating pattern. So if you look in Pasuk Tet Zayin, the first one, 16, look what it says when it comes to the detailing instructions of the Mishkan. Kechol asher tzivah Hashem oto. Okay? Just as Hashem had commanded him. Look at then Pasuk Yutet, 19. Kasher tzivah Hashem et Moshe. Just as Hashem had commanded. Then in 21. Kasher tzivah Hashem et Moshe. Then in 23, Kasher Tzivah Hashem Moshe. 25, Kafhei, Kasher Tzivah Hashem Moshe. And 27, Kasher Tzivah Hashem Moshe. Now this, if you thought that was a lot, this is just a selection. I found 20 references when it comes to the building of the Mishnah with this phrase, or a similar phrase, but usually it's exactly this phrase, Kasher Tzivah Hashem Moshe. This continues into Vayikra and Zav. This continues when we're detailing all the different korbanot that could be brought into the Mishkan, and then the Miluim ceremony, the dedication ceremony, which goes into our Sedra Parshat Shmini. There are altogether about 40 references. Every single step along the way when it comes to the building of the Mishkan, to the dedication of the Mishkan, to the korbanot, etc., everything to do with the Mishkan, we are told in black and white. Okay, we don't really have this. With other things in the Torah, that every single little thing we're told was done exactly as Hashem had prescribed it. Now, this was important. This was important because what was the Mishkan? The Mishkan was a physical object, which was a symbol of Hashem's presence. But when Bnei Yisrael made a physical object, okay, i.e. the Egel HaZahav, the golden calf, okay, that ended in complete disaster. So Hashem has allowed us this physical object to bring korbanot and get close to Hashem, but it has to be done exactly how Hashem commands us to do it. So we can now begin to answer our question, which is why there's this gap between the episode of Nadav dying and Acharimot, because when we go back to our pasuk that I had. Okay, let me just bring it back. Right. Here we go. Okay. So, Eisara Asher Lo Tziva Otam. This is the first time when concerning the Mishkan, that we don't have Kasher Tziva Hashem Moshe after 40, 45 references, that everything was done exactly as Hashem commanded. Okay, now we have Asher Lo Tziva Otam. Okay, this is the first episode concerning the Mishkan where something doesn't go. So something is not done exactly as Hashem commanded. And actually, from a laning perspective, if you look at the notes under Asher Lo, okay, there's that double what's called a double tavir under Asher Lo. This is a very rare note. Okay, there's only five of them in the whole Torah. This is the third out of the five, and it's a little bit of a drawn out note, and certainly the note is seeming usually in Merachah Chavurah is something to draw your attention to for something, and the note is seemingly drawing your attention to Asher Lo. Okay, it was not done to our top, so that's interesting. So where does this leave us? Now. What happens after this? Okay. Well, after this episode, we then have five chapters. Okay, five chapters dealing very complicated laws of tum and tahara. Okay, of ritual impurity. Okay, the most complicated laws that we will read in Tazrim Tzorah, because it was now made very very clear who and who cannot enter the Mishkan under various circumstances. And just a very sort of quick summary of Hazarim Matsara. We have all various different types of impurities. We have the least severe type of ritual impurity known as a Tumat Erev, where or somebody who became ritually impure under various circumstances, all they had to do was wait until the evening and wash their clothes. Okay, then there was a more severe type of ritual impurity known as the Tumat Shiva, which involved a longer Tahara process, usually involving Korbanot, and lasted 7 days. But without getting into the details of that, there's no prohibition actively of becoming tamei, ritually impure. Under certain circumstances, it just happens. But there is a prohibition of entering the Mishkan if you're impure. And now the sequence of Sidrot begins to make sense. Okay, because just to summarize, from Vayikra all the way up to Achrimot, Vayikra and Tzav detail how and when an individual can bring a korban to the Mishkan. In Shmini, we have the dedication ceremony, and we read about Nadav and Avihu making a seemingly unauthorized entry into the Mishkan. Now then, that leaves the 5 chapters of Tumah and Tahara detailing exactly every possible scenario, who and who isn't tamei, and therefore by extension, who and who isn't allowed to enter the Mishkan. And before we get to Achrimot, right at the end of Matsara, we have a pasuk which summarizes things very nicely for us. So here we go. Right, this is the one. Right. No. Here we go. Yeah. Right. V'hizartem et b'nei yisov mitumatam. Okay, it's not so easy to translate v'hizartem, but you can translate it as, and b'nei Yisrael should be put on guard against their tumah, against their ritual impurity, or they should separate themselves from their impurity. V'lo yamutu b'tumatam, so they shouldn't die as a result of their tumah. B'tama mishkan, meaning my mishkan amongst them. So we see the main consequence of becoming Tumah is that you should become Tahor, you should become pure, so that you can enter the Mishkan. And I think the real message from this Sidrot is that we cannot access the level of Achrimot. What's Achrimot? It's the Yom Kippur service. Okay, it's the Yom Kippur service performed by the Kohen Gadol on the holiest day of the year, Yom Kippur, in the holiest part of the Mishkan, the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So before we get to that level, we have to take a step back and think, are we in the right frame of mind? We cannot just hop on into the Mishkan. Now, obviously, nowadays we don't have a Mishkan, we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, and we don't. Perhaps it's hard for us to relate to all this Tumah and Tahara, to the Mishkan, to the Korbanot. But I think we can actually apply this to our own lives. You know, we're all very sad that shuls have closed, but please God, when they do open, we can learn from these Sidrot, Right, a shul is, was originally built as a substitute when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. It's a place of Kedusha. And perhaps instead of hopping on, as it were, into the Mishkan, okay, we should take a step back. We should think, when we enter a shul, okay, should we adjust the way we talk? Should we adjust the way we behave? Should we adjust the way we think? How guilty are we of saying a bracha without maybe thinking or focusing on what we're saying? So even though the Tumah and the Tahara, which is detailed in Tazri Mitzvah, is specifically about entering the Mishkan, you know, especially now that we're spending so much time at home, so much time to reflect on what our Judaism means to us, we can take the message of having this heightened sense of awareness of what it means to connect to Hashem, right? Even though Nadav and Avihu, who were tzaddikim and were on such a high level, but caution was needed to be exercised. We cannot, Hashem has now made it clear, it wasn't a case you could just, even with the sincerest of intentions, can't just hop on into the Mishkan. Just like now, right, with everything that's going on with coronavirus, we have a heightened sense of awareness to wash our hands, not to touch our faces, et cetera. I think the message of these Sidrot is having a heightened sense of awareness of not our physical hygiene, but our spiritual hygiene. And I think, I'll just finish on this, I think a really good example of this is Sefirat HaOmer. So we're counting the Omer now. And in most Siddurim, you'll find before the bracha, you'll have this little blurb, little paragraph, which begins, Hinini Mucham Muzanan Mekayim Mitzvat Aseh. Okay, it's a little sort of meditation, if you like, and it usually quotes the pasuk for the mitzvah you're about to do. So in the case of Sefirat HaOmer, it will say, Usfatem Lachem Mocharat HaShabbat, the source pasuk for the Omer from Parsha Emor. And I think that's a great example of this. before you go in and say the bracha for the omer and just and it, within a flash you've done it. You take a step back. You think what I'm about to do. Okay, you quote the pasuk from the Torah of what you're about to do. I sphira omer. Okay, you consciously aware of what I'm about to do. Then you can say the bracha. So that's I think a message of the sequence of parashot we're reading from Shmini to Achrei Mot. And with that, I wish you all a very good Shabbos.